Management plan was just approved. It's a document that took 9 years to formulate. Over $5 million they put into it. Hundreds of meetings up and down the coast in every area of Alaska, in Washington. Constant meetings with engineers from industry, from state and federal agencies. It's a fantastic production. Mainly, they saw that if you're going to regulate people, you have to get the consent of the regulatees. It's just like running a prison. You can't run a prison unless you gain a certain amount of consent from the prisoners, and you're setting up your regulations. So if you're going to set up a system of regulation, you know, governing these enormous multinational industries. These are people like British Petroleum, who are the world's best colonizers in the world and really are very slick. The way they can, I've seen them move into communities, organize rump governments in order to subvert local leadership and things like this. You're going to have to get your best guns, and you're going to have to be able to tax those people to help you pay for what you need to deal with them, to get them to sit down and develop fora, you know, forums for negotiating resource conflicts before they arise. And, you know, you need a lot more than just, you know, the resources of villages. And this is why I say, as a lot of people have said, you know, don't overlook regional governments in taking care of, you know, resource issues. And I think it's really important to look at resource development. There's going to be so much more resource development in these next 10 years like you've never seen in Alaska. You know, I see the reports that come from industry and the plans they have for Alaska. There's no area of Alaska that will be left untouched because of resources available. Even around here, you go from here to Kenai, you don't think there's much oil involved. Well, all over you see capped oil wells. The oil companies are already here. They've got their land. They've discovered their oil. They've capped it over, and they say there's nothing here, but it's just not marketable yet. It will be someday. They'll want to go back and exploit those industries. And considering the tremendous resources, you're going to have tremendous amounts of mining and coal and so many other things. And I think every native government, whether it's an IRA or a municipal government, has to prepare for those eventualities and has to be able to organize with other municipalities and regional ways to deal with those things. I would like to just conclude by saying that I think, you know, we are at a watershed, and I think we should go back and put ourselves in the situation that the framers of the Constitution, you know, they were faced not with a blank tablet. You know, but they had to deal with institutions that had been set up over the 90 years of American administration of Alaska, and they realized that they just couldn't do away with all of these institutions. There are already towns set up and public utility districts and school districts mainly. And they were very concerned about getting their boroughs going, and so they had to reconcile their ideas of boroughs with these existing institutions. And I think this is what we have today. We've got a new idea here. We have the idea of native government coming along. And I think one of your biggest assets is to take a good assessment at two things. First of all, looking at existing municipal structures and governmental structures that are being well used by rural people and native people today, looking at the lessons of those, and incorporating them into your new systems. And secondly, to look for two things: how you can get the most possible return for your money, how you can get the most possible strength with the least amount of additional government impositions on the people. And I think if there's one thing that this commission can do is to offer guidelines for local governments in evaluating problems. Guidelines for local governments in choosing which forms of governments they want. That'll give them the most possible return for their effort. And I want to just conclude with this quote from the Morehouse, McBeath, and Lee's latest book on local government in Alaska. It says, local and regional organizations provide services and representation that are strongly entrenched. They take full advantage of various sources of authority and funding in the U.S. federal system. And because state-level pressures for unification at the regional level have been weak or vacillating, this situation produces the very complex system of local governments, quasi-governments, and service areas one sees today in rural Alaska. In contrast to borough governments in urban Alaska, this system lacks congruity and neatness. But the rural model of diffusion in service provision and the proliferation of governments may be the most effective approach to the complex problems of rural Alaska. Certainly, this system seems preferable to any other perceived alternative as far as rural people are concerned. And I think what he's saying is that even though there are no provisions in ANCSA for governance for Alaskans, you've got an awful lot of experience out there on which to build your future solutions. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. That's a point of view that I'm glad you brought forward. What I was going to suggest is that we ask Vic Fisher to carry on, and then we might have a few questions and discussion. Senator Fisher?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will address you today not as senator, but as one of the framers of the Constitution that Bill keeps talking about. I was very much involved in drafting the local government article of the Constitution. And many of the things that Bill mentioned are really very pertinent to what has evolved. I'm glad that you're addressing the potentials of municipal government, of local government under Alaska's Constitution, because these potentials have hardly been scratched. Those who were involved in establishing the North Slope Borough, like Charlie Edwards and John Buchholz, Eben Hobson, and a few others, really pioneered something that was closer to the concept that was discussed during the Constitutional Convention than anything else that we've seen so far. Essentially, under the Alaska provisions on local government in the Constitution, you can do almost anything. The Constitution provides for two types of municipal governments. One is the borough, which is conceived as an area-wide unit. The other is a city. A city is, in effect, your local, the conventional local government. The borough, by the way, was conceived as a more flexible form of county, but the county system was at its lowest ebb at the time, so nobody wanted to use, or at least the majority didn't want to use that terminology. But the important thing is that you do have the basis in the Constitution for going toward almost anything you want at both the local and the regional levels. I think that it's important as you look at these concepts that are available that you not view them in terms of the tools, specific tools that have evolved under the municipal code. If you do, I think you're going to hit stone walls before you even reach halfway to the potentials. One example is something that Dave Case ran into. The problem with the second class city, the problem of reaching home rule under the existing law, to get to home rule, a municipality has to be a first class city. to be a first-class city, you have to meet certain criteria, including a population of 400. That's a strictly artificial construct that came along because somebody wanted to put something in general law. Under the Constitution, a first-class city and a first-class borough can go to home rule without any legislative provisions necessary for them to reach there. It was written as a self-executing clause to make sure that any reluctance on the part of the legislature did not interfere with the effectuation of home rule at the local level. At the same time, the Constitution says that home rule can be, I forget the exact terminology, but the effect is that home rule can be granted to other classes of cities and boroughs. There is no reason under the Constitution why a second class city or a 14th class city should not be able to have ultimate home rule. There is no reason why an area that is now unincorporated should not be able to go directly to home rule. We have discussed that in terms of regional government. I heard a reference today which was very close, that Northwest Territory is in effect the vestiges of what was of Canada left over after the various provinces and territories were organized. Well, that is the unorganized borough in Alaska. It is totally counter to the concept, basic intent of the Constitution. The intent was that you do regionalize, establish logical regions throughout Alaska, and then within each region, let the people participate in the decision of what is the most appropriate level of government, i.e. organization, and that a region could remain unorganized, provided that whatever services were performed by the state within that region would be performed with the maximum involvement, maximum participation by the people in that particular unorganized borough. And from then on, you could have a spectrum, a continuum all the way to ultimate home rule. Home rule scares some people. The Alaska provision on home rule states that a home rule municipality, that's a city or a borough, can exercise all legislative powers not prohibited by law or charter. Legislative power, of course, means anything that the legislature can do, or that the legislature could grant to a municipality, could be performed by a home rule municipality unless prohibited by state law, which includes the Constitution or legislation, or by the municipality's own charter. We have a series of specified prohibitions now. There are certain things a municipality may not do. There are also certain areas where the courts have decided that home rule powers are in such direct conflict with existing state law that, in effect, state law constitutes a prohibition. There's sort of a fuzzy line in there. But there are relatively few prohibitions. A municipality, a borough, a city can go into resource development and to almost any kind of activity. Conversely, a home rule municipality could have a charter that says it shall do nothing. Existing law, again, says that first-class cities and municipalities perform certain functions, and it's been accepted because we're dealing mostly with municipal governments plus the, I mean, with urban governments plus the North Slope Borough, which had a special interest in this. But it generally involves education, involves planning, involves zoning, land use controls. So those automatically step in, taxation, property assessment, and so on. However, there is nothing inherent in the state constitution that says that a municipality must exercise zoning if it is a home rule municipality. A home rule charter could, and very properly should, provide certain provide prohibitions as to functions to be carried out by that particular government, including it could provide, for instance, that no property tax shall be levied. One of the problems in a lot of areas, that rural areas that have considered establishing boroughs under home rule charter or otherwise, one of the problems has been the fear that a borough would tax native lands. There is no reason why a charter could not provide that lands shall not be, there shall be no property tax, or there's, or it can provide for certain exemptions. In other words, a charter can sort of open the door to do anything. It can also be extremely restrictive in accordance with what the people want. Again, in terms of what we're dealing with here in the context of your particular mission, local government, of course, functions under the state constitution. It has to be non-discriminatory. It has to be based on one person, one vote. It cannot be an exclusively native. It cannot be a tribal instrumentality to the exclusion of non-natives. If the natives constitute a majority, they could and should control, but there can be no disenfranchisement of the minority in the process of establishing a government under the Alaska Constitution, which is different from tribal arrangements under the federal government. So that is something to clearly recognize. Let me stop right here, because I could go on into lots of diversions as to what is, what can be, what could be, what shouldn't be. But my purpose here is not to tell you what you ought to do, but simply to try and acquaint you with a possibility under the Alaska Constitution, which I think does provide a set of tools, both at the local community level and at the regional level. Let me just say that in rural Alaska, at the community level, home rule could be provided for communities of 15 or 50 people. The present law can be changed very easily. At the regional level, you have to look at another complication, and that is, of course, that not in all areas where you have native communities do natives necessarily predominate in terms of voting power. So we can look at the borough as an instrumentality for native self-government, really only in areas like Western Alaska or Northern Alaska, where natives have a majority. It would certainly start running into problems on the Kenai Peninsula, in the Chugach region, Koniag region, and some of the other areas of Alaska. Anyway, I hope this will have been helpful.
Yeah, well, thank you, Senator Fisher. Just before we have some questions and comment, I'd like to make a suggestion about how we proceed for the rest of the day, because Perhaps we could devote the next 15 minutes to a discussion of what Bill Dubay and Vic Fisher have said. And then we'll take a break. And then I'd like to ask Byron Malott to talk about the question that is next on our agenda, that is the relationship between Native governments and ANCSA corporations. And then I'd like to ask Tim Coulter, toward the end of the afternoon, to offer some thoughts about how far all of this has gotten us, and to suggest perhaps some new departures that have emerged from his head, if not from this discussion. And so I know that compresses this a little bit, but that always happens at these things. What can you do? Well, let's start over here with David Getchies, and then Sheldon, and then Charlie.
I want to say a few things about the burl concept. It seems to me that it's appropriate to emphasize municipal forms as a way of taking control over the destiny of people in a particular area. But I want to also point out some of the downsides. I think that when the Arctic Slope Eskimos were forming the North Slope Borough, they were aiming at some very specific problems in that area, problems that may be shared elsewhere, but the solution may not be available elsewhere. The particular problem of the time was addressing how to deal with the adverse impacts that were foreseen for massive energy development in their homeland. And how do you protect a land base and a way of life against destruction in the face of that type of development? Secondly, how do you secure some of the benefits for the people in that area? How do you keep some of the tremendous wealth that would be developed at home? It appeared that there would be some destruction of the land base. There would be some infringement on a subsistence way of life. And that there would be very little money kept on the North Slope because people were not going to live there who worked in the fields, and there was no local taxing entity. Meanwhile, the educational conditions were some of the worst in the state of Alaska, with children having to go to Juneau and in some cases Oregon and Oklahoma to go to school, and because of lack of funds sometimes were away for a year at a time. It was a deplorable situation, yet the wealth that was going to be generated in that area would be quite adequate to solve a lot of these problems. The need was then for protection of resources and for getting a share of the benefits of this development. And the North Slope Borough has been successful to a large extent in doing both. But there are some problems there. One of them is that the sovereignty of a municipal form is defined by others, in this case by the state legislature. And that was brought home to the Eskimos of the Arctic Slope shortly after the formation of the borough, when the legislature passed what would normally be called special legislation, but in this case was through the niceties of our legal system escaped being set aside as special legislation. It was legislation limiting the taxing authority of the North Slope Borough, based on a formula that applied to all boroughs, saying that boroughs having less than a certain density of population, all boroughs with less than that density of population would be limited in their taxing power. Of course, it only applied to the North Slope Borough in its actual effect. Now, this, it struck me at the time, and I think the more I think about it, it is a blatant example of a reaction that the oil companies and the legislators at their behest have not really duplicated any place else. Oil companies typically feed the coffers of local governments throughout the United States and the world. They feed those coffers generously and according to the whims of county commissioners and city councils and state legislatures and so on. But in this case, they were so afraid that they would be overtaxed that they sought a special act of the Alaska legislature and got it. It seems to have overtones of racism, to say the least. Now,
excuse me, David, were you instrumental in the development of the North Slope Borough?
Well, I participated to some extent in the early days, doing some legal work for the proponents of the borough. Now, I point that example out about the taxation to indicate that there is some danger in relying too heavily on the municipal form. You are subject to political forces beyond your own control. The sovereignty is defined by others. This is not in any way to detract from the tremendous accomplishments that can be had through the borough form, through the municipal government form, particularly in this state where you have as Vic Fisher described it, a very unique and useful form of municipal government, flexible form. In the case of the North Slope Borough, it was primarily an economic device, and it has proved to be primarily an economic device, a device that's allowed for planning for resources, for the establishment and operation of schools that have turned out to be very good schools. It's a device for providing social welfare to provide for the people of an area that were very much in need, and a way of providing some mitigation for damage to the land. It also, in this case, entitled the people of that area to some of the state's share of the land that it got from the United States government on statehood. Now, we'll have to defer to Charlie on the success or lack thereof in getting that that land that the borough is entitled to. All of this says that the borough has been very useful, but I want to emphasize that besides it not being a traditional solution, it does leave the people of an area subject to the will of others, placing some limits on it, and it does not address one of the most fundamental problems that you, Commissioner Berger, raised at the beginning of our deliberations, and that is that an objective here is to seek a way to protect native land from being lost to native people. It doesn't address that problem. It can help protect the land and resource base, but it won't prevent its loss. It may or may not end up having native control as populations change. In the North Slope, while there's been a tremendous influx of non-native population, it's far from a majority and is not likely to be. So native control into the future is likely. The one thing that will maybe limit its use elsewhere is that it's taken a tremendous tax base in order to make it work on the North Slope. And that tax base, I guess, is likely to be around for next 20 or 30 years anyway. Whether it'll sustain itself beyond that, I guess, depends on how the Kuparuk Field pans out and that sort of thing. But I wonder whether that kind of tax base exists elsewhere in the state of Alaska. I'd like to defer to others who have been working with the borough recently.
Just let me say a word, Bill. The how we got to municipal governments, perhaps I'm glad you reminded us of how we got there, because ANCSA is the subject of this commission's review. But given that people in the bush want to protect their land, and that many of them, many, many of them say, let's turn it over to a tribal government, and tribal governments being more than places for parking land, but being governments, Where do we go from there? And many people, the first 2 days of this roundtable, had indicated they were really eager to develop a system where tribal government would be the only government in their villages. And I simply wanted us to take a look at the uses of municipal government, state chartered government, to make sure that people didn't get the idea they should be trashed without getting some further explanation of what they can offer. Bill, you started this. We'll go back to you for a minute.
I'd like to ask Mr. Getches if you think really that natives would have any more sovereignty control over their resources, you know, in a reservation system. You know, if you look at the reservations, you know, the control the natives have had traditionally until quite recently was very poor. They couldn't even sell their own resources. And, you know, there's always, in whatever system, there's tremendous political pressures involved in native use of those resources. And it'd be hard to find another system in which, you know, natives had so much control and received so much from the resources as the borough. You have to realize that sovereignty is always a relative issue. You're always going to have to deal with, you know, these other governments, just like, you know, our states are sovereign, aren't they? Okay.
It's true that a tribal government is subject to the will of Congress, and Congress
much more so than I think that the boroughs are subject to the state.
Well, I don't know what that means, much more so. The tribes are sovereigns predating the United States of America and are subject to the plenary control of Congress. The boroughs and municipalities are creations of the state of Alaska and subject not only to preemptive authority by the state, but so of course consistent with the state constitution, but also to preemption by the federal government within the realm of constitutional powers that Congress can exercise. So I think that...
That's fine in theory, but when it comes down to the practicality, you find in Alaska, it's the state that has consistently sided with the natives in the protection of their resources. You find over and over again, let's say in the conflict regarding the bowhead whale, you find in conflict with the federal government over offshore lease sales, and so many issues. You know, the state has come to the aid of the native groups and the villages in protecting resources. And just like Eben Hobson said, he said, you know, he distrusted all government, you know, whether it was the state or the federal government. But his whole plan, you know, was to throw in his lot with the state because he could deal with the state people, and he felt that, you know, they knew his needs better, and he'd rather throw in their lot with them than with a remote government.
Yeah,
and exercise more sovereignty that way.
Okay, Bill, you've got this. You've brought this crowd to life, anyway. Sheldon, I said you were next.
Bill, I don't know if you were here when we first got started into this particular roundtable, but one of the first premises, and I think it bears repetition here, the first premise that we must realize that the state of Alaska and the federal government, through legislation, has been attempting genocide on Alaska's native people by supplanting their tribal government, that government which has been here since time immemorial, by the imposition of the state of Alaska and the federal government. Now, one of the things that we must realize here is that we have certain rights and protections under federal law as far as what we as tribal governments can expect from the federal government. Now, the use, I'm not saying that everything is wrong. I'm saying that that's the premise we must start from. The federal government and the state of Alaska have been attempting, in not so many words on paper, but by their very acts, at totally supplanting tribal governments, eroding their authority to such extent that they can say, we are sovereign over Alaska, in violation of our trust of the federal government for not only protection of our lands, our resources, but also maintenance of same at the level to which we were accustomed, not prior to 1971, but prior to 1959 at least, if not prior to 1867. Again, we must not lose sight of that fact. And that is the primary reason why the United Tribes of Alaska will be pushing, we will be making a concerted effort across the state for, number one, the Restoration Act of Alaska's Natives in 1985. And one of the things which must be realized is that the Alaska Constitution as adopted and the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act as adopted have said that they will not mess with the Native people. The Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act says in black and white, this is not a jurisdictional act. And this is the key which I want my Native people to realize. Our jurisdiction has not been limited, not by the state of Alaska, not by the federal government. The only limitations on the jurisdiction of tribal government are those they impose on themselves. So I take it, I'm telling my Native people, your government is there, its jurisdiction has never been limited, and those limitations which you place on yourself, those traditional tribal boundaries, are the only boundaries which limit the jurisdiction of tribal government. And the state of Alaska, as soon as they realize this, I'm sure will help us in our fight with the federal government to restore all rights and privileges to which we are entitled under the federal trust responsibility. Now, as I said, and the law is written that way, ANCSA is not a jurisdictional act. There is no federal act or state act which limits the jurisdiction of tribal governments. Okay?
Well, I think we should spend a few minutes about the subject that Vic Fisher mentioned. Charlie?
The state of Alaska is blessed with a constitution as such as ours. It is so good that its own people have ignored its value. And in the first place, there must be a local desire for such a need and such a determination that one desires such a government. And in this evolution, that one must petition the local boundary commission for such a petition with 25 signatures who have voted in the state process. And then the local boundary commission receives the petition, then it too must engage a hearing dialogue. So the need for government and the state process to get started, what we did on the North Slope Borough, in the creation of the North Slope Borough, was it was not the cities that petitioned for a government. It was the Arctic Slope Native Association and its members that have petitioned. And because those memberships, of which we are, were the same citizens. So when we looked at the possibility, we had looked at the intrusion that was coming upon us, not just from the sake of federal intrusion, not just from the sake of oil intrusion, not just from the sake of state intrusion, but also from other native groups. So we from the north are so protective of each other, maybe that we are the most reactionary force to the alienated form that is coming upon us. So when we appear offensive to you here, it is because that the rest of the world was offensive to us. And so these administrative characteristics fall upon our conduct today and our care to keep what we have on the North Slope, because the financial desire and the desire of the world, how it is organized, that there are more of them and less of us. So we looked at the maximization of protection of not just ourselves, but what can the state provide. And these were not without cost. And so the state of Alaska and the oil companies, Mr. Malott was director of the local boundary commission who had heard our petition. And on top of that we had a pressure of 22 oil companies who had reasons why the Eskimos need not a government. So here are non-persons who do not have educational problems, who do not wear clothes, eat, or sleep off the and who are not even residents, but they had the desire that too much government had already existed so that the Eskimos should never have one. So the alienated force that the corporation, that the 14th Amendment brought to bear upon the Americans here. There are two classes of Americans. There are natives and the landed immigrants. And so state of Alaska is divided in two classes of people, natives and non-natives, not by choice, but by design. So our reaction and our adversity to Anglo-Saxon feelings is a real one. And so the state prior to 1973, I would not recommend the creation of more boroughs until the land entitlement question of the state of Alaska, Section 6, is resolved equally to all governments. So state of Alaska is denying the very basis of local government that is enshrined from Northwest Ordinance to date. So when you talk about expansion of the United States, the biggest local government expansion was the declaration of the Northwest Ordinance in securing assumption for whose government is going to exist. And in the Northwest Ordinance, when you go back to the federal side, our right to this land here is by birthright. And the mere right that the Anglo-Saxon community have here is the one that have weaned out of the federal government. It was given to you by a grant of statehood. And that statehood is upon condition. And one of those most violated conditions is Section 4 of the Statehood Act. And so state government, technically, I think that the Supreme Court said it so beautifully in Cogma versus United States. It says, and I want all of the tribes and every Alaskan to be alarmed of it, that the worst enemy of tribal function is the desire of state government, even with those that have disclaimer. And when people of Anchorage felt that that North Slope Borough did not need any more money and should not have any more whatsoever, that that they are entering a gray area, a very dangerous gray area, which can be litigated under an old federal statute which the United States must enforce. It's called a seditiously liable statute, where a state government or a group of antagonists, white people, have maligned the natives, that the federal government has a responsibility to go shut them up. And so the state area, so these land grants that came from Congress are not without price. That state of Alaska can lose some of this. So it did not receive because it is sovereign. It received them as a mere gift. It did not have them before, did not have anything before. And so the rights that the state of Alaska has, although in our Constitution are really nice and there is room for creativity, but we live in the world of human frailty. Human frailty is that the Anglo-Saxon community has not seen in its best interest that the native may be a way to get even with Uncle Sam. He has not utilized this vessel who has sovereign immunity and who can bring gifts and gains to the state that it could not nowhere ever achieve. So I think that the dumbness and the stupidity of the racist